1010XL 92.5 FM presents Jaguars Today with your host Mike Dempsey and Ryan O'Halloran.
Hey, welcome in everybody. Happy Thursday to you. Brought to you today by Caudnall and Cadillac. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony, Jaguars Today kicking off our final day of the week here at Everbank. And O'Halloran's presence, Tony, practically increases by 50% the amount of people in the building today compared to yesterday.
This is the closest parking spot I've ever gotten.
Yeah, right? I'm like three rows closer than I've ever been before.
Yeah.
Players' lot as empty as it was yesterday, and you should enjoy a little bit of downtime.
For the fans, this shows you how little is going on. One of the cars in the parking lot, players' lot, has a cover on it.
Right. It's going to be there for a while. Yeah. So, yeah, if it's out there, it's not in use anytime. So you had a little vacation, right?
I did. I went to North Dakota to see my parents for a bunch of days and got back on Monday night. But it was a nice little take a little bit of a breather, but back here now and getting some stuff ready for Sunday's paper.
Everybody summers in North Dakota. All the rich people summer in North Dakota.
Well, I will say this is, I didn't know anything else. That's where I grew up. But they pay if I wanted to get the same apartment up there here that I did up there, or vice versa, I would pay more up there right now. Because,
really?
Because the demand and the unemployment's like at 2%.
What brings everybody? What's the big industry up in North Dakota?
Well, I think it's, there's a ripple effect from the oil in the western part of the state.
You got military up there, right?
Not in Fargo so much, but they sort of drove me around because I hadn't been back in a year. My dad was like, I have no idea who's living in these apartments, but they're building them.
Oh.
Yeah. This high school is new.
Does dad expect to know everyone in the city of Fargo?
Well, he's trying to figure out, okay, where are these people working? You know, because they're moving here, so
right.
The demand's there. So because they've seen their property value skyrocket, which is good for them.
Yeah.
For their house when they eventually unload it.
It's a boom town, Tony, up in North Dakota right now. Hey, you know what? God bless America, Ryan. And what more fitting weekend could we say that than July 4th Independence Day weekend? Coming up, we're taking tomorrow off July 3rd because it's been a grueling four-day work week once again here. 2 hours a day, 4 days a week, it really wears on you.
Yeah.
So we're going to take tomorrow off and celebrate Independence Day like the rest of you out there. Question of the day today, not football-related in the least bit. It's Americana, baby. So apologies to all of our friends across the pond, but we're celebrating our independence from you, at least some of you, this weekend.
If they're listening to this show,
yes,
they understand.
You think so?
If they follow American football,
they get it.
They get July 4th.
They get July 4th. Well, I'm sure they understand the concept of July 4th, but today we're just asking you what's on the menu for the perfect July 4th weekend cookout. And that we want beverage menu. We want entrees. We want appetizers. We want dessert. What are you cooking? What are you grilling out? What are you serving?
Oh, yeah.
To friends and family this weekend? Are you a big cookout guy, Tony?
I would be. I used to be. The neighborhood I'm living in
Somebody
now.
Somebody buy Tony a gas grill, please.
No.
I see where this is headed, Ryan.
I'm not allowed.
You can't have it in your little...
The neighborhood I live in now, they won't allow us to have a grill.
Really?
So it used to be something like any holiday like this, I would be going to buy myself some beef, and I'd be making burgers or ribs or whatever.
And your neighborhood association is run by the Taliban? Who is?
I don't know. I live on the second floor, so I can understand a little bit. They don't want like some idiot to put like a grill on like the back porch or something like that to create some real issues.
Yeah,
I do wish they would just put like a community grill somewhere around me, right? Like in the backyard, we got all this grass.
Yeah, like
there.
The ones that are anchored in the ground,
right.
that kind
aren't
of thing.
Doing anything, right? So just put one every couple hundred yards in the back of these buildings so that people who want to grill can grill.
There you go. Oh, how are you, a big grill guy?
I don't have a grill. My apartment.
What country am I living in?
Well. My apartment complex, my porch had been recently screened in. All of them got screened in, so I eliminate that. But if somebody's grilling and I'm there, I like a burger.
Just burger.
And
burgers
maybe
are great.
Some potatoes that you can slice up and put on the grill and in the foil.
Sliced up potatoes in foil on the grill.
Yeah.
I mean, like, what are we talking about here? We're not talking French fries.
No,
here.
It's like grilled potatoes.
Grilled potatoes.
You know, they shape of a chip, but you know, they come out a little crispy.
I don't think I've ever had that.
Yeah, you can season them up a little bit in there if you want to. Yeah,
I'm sure you can.
Yeah,
just like just about anything. We got the we got the gas grill. We got the Black Friday grill.
See, you're an adult.
I am an adult. I got a little deck out back.
Exactly.
I got the grill on the concrete porch right there. Yeah, right there. Got the wife, the mortgage, the two cars, just the one kid that I'm aware of. And, yeah, but we got the, like, the $99 gas grill on Black Friday that, you know, they say it's a $8,000 value gas grill. And it's got all the things you're never going to use. And all we do is throw some brats on that bad boy a couple times a week and use it for about 5 minutes at a pop. And
right.
That's the way it goes. I had a little round one, just one of those little ones you throw the briquettes in, you know, back in the day. My wife and I, when we were living in Sin, we used to live on this section of St. Augustine down on Marine Street downtown, which we had this great little walk-up fifth floor apartment, and you could crawl out the living room window, and you'd be on the roof. That's the way the architecture was, and the roof overlooked the Intercoastal Waterway. So we had this round little barbecue grill that we kept up there. You know, we grilled whatever, chicken wings and what have you. And one day I picked it up to move it, and it was so old that one of the white-hot briquettes fell through the bottom, unbeknownst to me, and I stepped squarely on it. Barbecue mishap. Got to avoid those this
weekend.
That was
a yelp.
It was a scream. Two of my toes, I thought, fused together. But fortunately, I have full use of all my digits at this point in time. So today, share with us your favorite menu for the holiday weekend. Speaking of wings, a loose segue to Blake Bortles' story in USA Today. We talked about his usage last year, his workload last year. Coming right out of college, you throw to try to impress the scouts. You're getting ready for the combine. You go to individual team workouts. And then once that's done, once you're drafted, you're right into it with a rookie minicamp. And in Blake's case, it was taking significant snaps, even when Chad Henne was the presumed starter last year, resulted in him kind of wearing that arm down a lot towards the end of last season. And in USA Today, they've got a profile on Blake in there in today's paper and, you know, talks about him having a dead arm at the end of the season. And Dave Caldwell, I believe, is quoted as talking about he had to do some things to kind of overcompensate for that, to drive the ball. And that's why some of his mechanics got a little bit wonky at the end of the year. We talked about this with Blake. We talked about this with Dave Caldwell. Do you recall the specific use of the term dead arm prior to this?
I do.
Do you?
I remember talking either Blake or Gus. You know, something in there where it was maybe arm fatigue, you know, but definitely the thing where they thought he ran out of gas.
Right.
Because of the bowl season, the pre-combine, the pre-draft, mini camps, all that strung together without much time off. It's interesting the stuff about the mechanics, because when I talked to Dave Caldwell 2 weeks ago for a story in the next month or so, he thought a lot of the mechanics talk is overrated. That he is not, he doesn't think it's as big a deal as it's been made out to be, which to me it's, cause he likes to go back to, he can make plays. So tighten a couple things up. So,
right, as long as he's not throwing sidearm and he's delivering the ball consistently, accurately, but then why do we hear so much about the mechanics and Blake's desire to get them tightened up?
Well, it's a convenient storyline because you can't talk about wins and losses. I mean, it happens in every team. There's something you latch onto. So, but it's funny how, like, I mean, toward the end of last year, I mean, he'd have a couple bad throws, whatever, but he was also playing better. So he sort of fought through that.
He was more efficient with the football, right? Wasn't turning it over as much. Some of that in the story was attributed, Tony, to the fact that he wasn't driving it downfield the end of the season.
He
right.
couldn't get it downfield as much because of the issues with the arm. And I think part of the reason it's as big a story this offseason as it is because from the moment that Blake walked onto this facility, he was talking about the things that he thought he needed to work on, and the mechanical issues is what he talked about.
He sort of fanned that flame himself.
Right, right. You know, and then when he has an opportunity to kind of, you know, summarize what happened in this offseason, the first time he comes back in the building after the regular season's done, he says, you know, my arm was fatigued. It was deteriorating at the end of last year. This is why I'm going to see Tom House. This is why I'm doing all these different things. I think Blake has made this kind of a story here for his first couple off seasons with the Jacksonville Jaguars. And look, if he did show up on injury reports late in the year last year, and it was because of the toe, we thought, like, that's at least what I thought it was because of the toe injury in Baltimore. And apparently it was a combination of things. It wasn't just the toe, it was his arm as well. And if Blake feels like he's in a better place, which apparently he does, he feels much better physically this year than he did last year.
Well, I had been given an indication, like, the last 3 weeks of the season was that his shoulder was, he was just tired, you know. What that meant, were they cutting down on his practice reps? Don't know, but you look at from Baltimore to Tennessee, it was a short week. They weren't on the field anyways. So he played game, 3 days game, 5 days off. So, you know.
It's kind of like you hit the wall, right?
I mean, I think that's exactly what it was.
It's not like you're really injured even necessarily per se. It's just like you've got so many throws in such a period of time. And you just hit the wall, and it's kind of, you almost get a sense of like it's almost numb. Like you just don't have the juice in it right then. And the only thing that probably brings that back is rest. And like Tony said, he looked like a different guy. You know, just for his first offseason where he really got a chance to catch his breath and get a little bit of physical downtime as well as mental downtime, I think he looked like a different guy coming in. So it'll be interesting to see if that issue is in the past now that he's stepping into the second year of his career, gets into more of a normal rotation, I guess, in the off season.
But also, like, you talk about, this is your guy. This is your starter.
So,
like, in training camp, do they put him on a pitch count and say, okay, you know, your goal is to be ready for week one, but how do you manage that part? But also, this is a new offense that you want to get maximum reps on the field with it. So I think they'll probably find a happy medium, but I think, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if Chad Henne maybe took a little bit more than the usual backup would in camp.
Birthday boy, Chad Henne, by the way.
Hey.
Happy 3-0 to Chad Henne.
It's catching up.
That basically puts you on the chopping block on this team. Once you hit 30, man, they don't keep you around a whole lot longer. But it is Chad Henne's birthday today. I think you could build up that stamina, too. You know what I mean? I mean, I think it's tough in the situation he was in. He just had to throw. But I do think you get to the point, you hear about Tom Brady and Peyton Manning. These guys want to take every first team rep all throughout the summer, all throughout the season. And those guys, I don't think Peyton Manning's ever had as strong an arm as Blake Bortles has. So it's not just pure arm strength, how far you can throw it, but I think you can build up that stamina in that arm. Even though Peyton now at this stage of his career may wear down at the end of the season, mostly throughout his career. He took every rep, every snap, every throw, and threw it a ton. So I do think Blake will eventually be able to build that up, too, where they won't have to kind of finesse him in training camps if they even have to do that coming up this year. If you'd like to get in today, 641-1010 is the number. Kind of wide open to you today. You can also text us on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line, 641-1010. Again, fan feedback spotlight, having a little fun with it today. What's on the menu for your perfect July 4th cookout or whatever cookout you're having? Whatever the case may be, any good summertime weekend cookout, but particularly what you've got for July 4th. I rarely do the Throwback Thursday thing. Do you do much of the Throwback Thursday thing on social media ever? People love the Throwback Thursday thing. And I was thinking about this today. When I was a kid, July 4th weekend 1976, or I don't know if it was a weekend or not, but July 4th 1976, all that year, the American Freedom Train was making the rounds from coast to coast. And I remember going on that and touring that. When I was a kid, it came through New England when I lived in Connecticut, went all over the country, ended up actually in Miami. So I tweeted that out, too, to share your remembrances of that if you took part in that, if you're an old guy like I am, going back a ways to the mid-70s, and you can remember the bicentennial celebration. Got news from around the National Football League we'll get into. We'll talk Miami Dolphin football today, second on the Jags schedule. We talked with Mick Mixon, the voice of the Carolina Panthers, on Tuesday. We've got Hal Habib from the Palm Beach Post, covers the Dolphins, coming up in about 30 minutes. So we'll get into Miami now. they feel an ascending team down there with Ryan Tannehill getting the big contract and Ndamukong Suh coming in as one of the most highly paid players in the entire National Football League. What can they do to overtake New England, if anything? We'll talk about that with Hal Habib of the Palm Beach Post coming up. If you'd like to get in on Twitter today, of course, at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, and at 1010XL Fat Tony, and of course the Jaguars Today Facebook page, open for business as well. We're not here Friday, so today, Thursday, brought to you by Claude Nolan Cadillac. Jaguars Today, live from Everbank, heading into July 4th weekend. It's 1010XL, 92.5 FM. So all right, we continue on. Claude Nolan Cadillac brings you the show today, Thursday, live from Everbank Field. Final day of the week. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. If you're grilling out this weekend, or even if you're not, what would be on your ideal July 4th cookout menu?
Yep.
From liquid refreshment all the way down. I mean, you got to have ice cold beer.
Something.
You got to have ice cold beer. I don't care if you're drinking, like me, I'm a Crown Royal guy, but if you're going to have a July 4th barbecue, there has to be beer in an icy tub of some kind, right? I mean, like in the kind of water that's almost like slush, you know, with the cubes melted right to that point where you're not sure if it's a solid or a liquid that you're reaching your hand down into. That's what ice cold beer is all about. And you got to have that as part of your July 4th menu, I think. Yeah, you never know. Somebody wants a beer. Not everybody
sure.
drinks beer, but plenty of people do.
There's a lot of people that do.
It's got to be on there. Oh, Howard, you're just saying you're not a big fireworks guy.
No.
Me either, man. Yeah. I think it's more because I'm a crotchety old man. I used to love it when I was a kid. It's a big deal when you're a kid, but it's like everything now, Tony. They're everywhere. When you're a kid, you couldn't see. You saw fireworks once. Now it's like you go to any Suns game on a Friday night, you get fireworks display. It's the same thing.
It's the same thing in the major leagues, by the way. You go to a major league ball game on a Friday night, it's
fireworks.
Friday night fireworks.
Friday night fireworks. That's great.
Hit a homer.
Right.
Hey, home run. Let's go fireworks.
Touchdown.
Whatever. Everything. So it's a little, you know, but people love it. St. Augustine does a great job. They put on a huge display. But I'm just, man, Ryan, when I'm done, I'm done. When those fireworks are done, if I could be instantly teleported to my living room, my feet up on the couch, then I'd go. But I can't, so I don't. I'm just old. I want to be in climate-controlled conditions. I'll watch it on TV if I'm that interested, and I'm never interested enough to watch fireworks on TV.
Did you ever hurt yourself with fireworks?
I heard Dan and Jeff talking about it. Was that a friend of Dan's, it sounded like?
Yeah, they tell the story every fingers. Year. Yeah.
I did not. When I was a kid, we went to see them. Boy, I'm trying to remember if this was in Connecticut or if it was in DeLand, Florida. But I was pretty young. I'm guessing like fourth grade. And we went to one, and a chunk of something that, much like what Dan was talking about, it off of a firework fell to the ground, like an unexploded piece or something. I don't know what it was.
Mm-hmm.
And it bounced off the kid's leg who was sitting like right in front of me, like hit the ground, hit his leg. It wasn't on fire or anything like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, this is awesome. You know, like I'm going to go to fireworks all the time and maybe something will hit me.
Right.
But
yay.
I never had a firework injury of any of the little stuff. I probably burned my fingers. When I was a kid, we used to take those rolls of caps, you know, the little red ones, and we used to smash them with a rock. And if you smash them with a rock and you got lucky, it would kind of burn, but like slowly smolder. It'd be on fire and then, you know, they'd fire off, but it wouldn't just like blow up. And I know I try to pick those up at times and have them flare up at the wrong minute. I used to burn my fingerprints off when I was kids, but nothing major.
Yeah. I mean, we used to do the bottle rocket wars, which is just dumb.
Never got hurt. Never got hit in the face with a bottle rocket. We did the same thing. Who hasn't done? If you have bottle rockets, what else would you do
but
fire them at each other if you're of a certain age?
Yeah, you burn holes in shirts or something like that. I was at a camp one time, though, and we happened to be down there. It was 4th of July weekend. It was a church camp, and the older kids, which was me and about five or six other guys, were in charge of lighting off all the fireworks that they had. And they brought us like a couple $100 worth of fireworks, right? So it's at a football field that they had out at this campground. So all the campers are sitting in like a bleacher, and we're starting to set up the mortars. We've been playing around with some bottle rockets and stuff, but we're starting to set up the mortars. And we have three stands set up on these concrete plates. And We're firing them. It's going fine. The guy who's loading them, we have one guy in charge of loading the mortars and another guy in charge of lighting them up. So my friend goes to light up one of the mortars, and I hear the thump of a mortar supposed to be firing.
Yeah.
Nothing came out of the tube. So we're all standing there for a second. We're like, I wonder what's going. Boom! Like,
Did it blow the tube up?
Yeah. It was 10 feet away from me. It pushed me back a foot.
Wow.
The concussion of the mortar pushed me back a foot. We had a table behind us, again, with a couple $100 worth of fireworks, with flames from a firework going over it. I turned around. I was like, oh, no. I was like, this could get really bad.
Or really awesome.
Really quick. And so nothing happened. We went and saw the concrete thing that was underneath it. It was like a 4-foot slab of concrete got broken to like 12 pieces.
I remember you telling that story, yeah.
And then so he goes to the next one. And he lights it up, and we hear the thump, and nothing comes out. We all just, the kids in the stands tell a great story, because they just heard us all start going, run, run, because they don't know what's going on. They just thought they saw a really cool firework. And so they can hear us screaming, and it blows up, and apparently the guy was loading them in upside down. He loaded two back-to-back in upside down.
Oh, well, that'll explain it, at
least. Right, in the tube. So we were like, you're off loading duty, but we almost blew up a couple $100 worth of fireworks twice.
Mortar loading duty is no longer yours, sir. But how many people around here must do fireworks all the time? How does Phantom Fireworks stay in business?
I don't know.
You know what? I mean, I get 4th of July. I get it, right? It's Independence Day. We all like to sit around, have some cocktails, shoot up a few things, whatever.
Right.
Are people doing this all the time? I never see anyone using fireworks except on the 4th of July.
You own the place, right? If you own the place so you can cut the cost by you being the one that's only there, like during the entire off season, you're the only guy who ever works.
You're just there and, you know.
So that teenager is going to come to blow up a mailbox or whatever.
I guess.
That's basically what you do for the rest of the year.
I got a SCOBY update from the desk of one Tyler Devitt at the Greenbrier. Tiger had gotten it to 3-under and has made a bogey. Now he's back to 2-under through 8 holes. So there you have it.
Better than he's been in a long time.
It is, because he's feeling good, because he's back in the swing.
It's all in the open.
Swing of things, according to the National.
It's all out there. Everybody knows all the secrets.
It's all good. Let's go to the phone, 641-1010. I want to get into some comments coming up from Duke Iheanacho, who's been watching very jealously the opening 24-plus hours of NBA free agency. Who hasn't, by the way?
Right.
I mean, I'm jealous as well. We'll get into that. But let's go to Dave first up today, 641-1010, the number. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Hey, good morning, guys. How are we doing?
Good morning. Good. We're great.
Looking forward to Independence Day and happy 4th of July to all you guys. Now, what I've got going on Saturday is I've got a bunch of raw peanuts ready to go. I'll be boiling peanuts early in the morning, starting very early, and that'll be going all day long. I got a keg of Yingling already iced down, so it's ready to go. So that'll be going all day long. We're going to do the ribs and chicken, and for any little kids that show up, we'll have, of course, the burgers and dogs. And I always do baked beans, and I'm going to do a little twist this year with my Independence Day coleslaw. And all that is basic coleslaw with a red and blue dye that I put on half of it, and, of course, coleslaw is generally white, so I'll have red, white, and blue coleslaw. Now here's my dilemma. A buddy of mine has given me some fresh alligator tail. Now, I'm from the South. I love gator tail when it's cooked right, but I've never cooked that. So I'm reaching out to all the Googans out there and to you guys. So give me some ideas. I've got a boiler, I've got a fryer, and I've got a grill. What's the best way to prepare this alligator? And I think by noon, after we get about halfway into that Yingling, it probably really won't matter how I cook it.
At that point, it's all good, man. Just put it by that big mortar pipe. It'll cook it right up, according to Tony. It'll be fine.
There you go. That'll work. Well, guys, listen, man, I'm going to hang up and listen to you, man. Hey, I love the show. Appreciate all you do. God bless America, man. Have a good day.
God bless America. Thank you, Dave. Appreciate that, man. I don't know how you cook alligator. Joe Cowart would definitely tell you to put it in the deep fryer, because I'm pretty sure that's how Joe Cowart tells you to cook anything.
I can't remember ever having, like, grilled gator. Like, I feel like any gator I've ever had in my life has been fried.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if I've ever had – I probably had gator tail, like, at the Florida Cracker Cafe before. I can't really recall, so it doesn't stick with me that much. But if anybody's got a good gator tail recipe – you can share that with us. You can, any of the ways, you can call in or you can tweet us, and we'll pass that along to Dave. By the way, here's your dilemma. He said he had a dilemma. Your dilemma is when you put in the red and blue food coloring, you're not going to have patriotic coleslaw. You're going to have purple coleslaw. Okay? It's all going to blend
together.
It's on
different sides.
Oh, is it on different sides?
Yeah, he said he's got like three trays.
I didn't hear that very well. I was just picturing he's going to throw a little red on this side, leave the middle alone, and a little blue on the other side, and eventually it will all coalesce into looking purple. That's what it would be, right?
It would be.
What's that kind of cabbage that's purple, by the way? My grandma used to eat that stuff all the time.
I don't know. It's cabbage.
Nah, there's a kind of cabbage that's purple. It comes in a jar. They sell it in a jar. Figured out that'd be big up in North Dakota. O'Halloran, nothing.
That sounds disgusting.
It does. And, oh, believe me, it was. I didn't eat that stuff, but my grandmother loved it. Duke Iheanacho, safety for the Washington Redskins, lamenting, according to stories, the disparity between NBA contracts and NFL contracts. He talks about all this guaranteed money the NBA is throwing, he says. Sick. Meanwhile, the NFL, which generates the most money, won't even make the league minimum $1 million. Yes, $1 million. That means every single player's salary in the NFL should start there. Highest risk of injury, brain trauma, richest league. Okay, I agree. Highest risk of injury, brain trauma, richest league. But, Ryan, your employer, do they just say, you know what? Let's give Ryan more money out of the goodness of our hearts. Or is there kind of some established pay scale? And in many cases, a union has bargained these things.
That's the thing. And if Duke thinks the NBA money is sick this year, wait till next year.
Next year's going to go through the roof.
So if I'm the NFL owners, they have to be surprised they haven't been put up against the wall more on some kind of guarantee or some kind of higher minimum salaries. They're milking this for all it's worth, and the union's allowing them to do that.
They say that that it's one of the points the owners won't even discuss, won't even go down there, don't even bother to bring it. There's nothing you could give us in collective bargaining that would make us guarantee salaries across the board in the NFL.
Yeah, I'm sure that's the case. And you wonder if okay. What would the owners want if they wanted to go a little bit further and guaranteed? I think it would be an 18-game schedule.
I think that'd be a good starting point.
So how badly do the players want more of their money guaranteed?
Right, and then it becomes the whole issue: are we talking serious about health and injury repercussions, or are we just admitting that it's all a big money grab within certain parameters? Look, if you can make all the money you can and still have a healthy, safe game, you're going to do that. But, I think it's pretty clear with all the injury risk inherent in an NFL season that adding two more games is significant for these guys. So if it ever does come to that point, you wonder if it's not just been a lot of lip service to the safety issue. But here's the other thing. The salary cap in the NFL is more than double that in the NBA. Okay, you're right. The teams are richer. It's 143 plus million this year projected, right? Where in the NBA it's a little over 67 million. But you got 53 guys on the roster. You got 15 on the roster in the NBA. So even though the pool of money is significantly smaller in the NBA, there's less people you have to split it up between. Those guys are averaging, I did the math, averaging about $4.4 million per year in the NBA. The NFL, by the way, it's not poor. What do you think the average salary is in the NFL? You can figure out the quick math.
2.6.
2.7. Yeah, it's right there. That's pretty damn good. I mean, that's really good. You have an issue with that, Duke. You want that minimum brought up to $1 million? Go talk to Tom Brady. Go talk to Aaron Rodgers. Go talk to Russell Wilson, who are going to take down 20. And they deserve it. I'm not saying they don't deserve it. It's market economics. Those guys are in demand. They play a position that there aren't enough good ones out there. But I get it. You're watching it. You see all this stuff. You're like, wow, the NBA is not nearly as popular. But their unions, both the NBA and Major League Baseball, have done phenomenal jobs compared to the NFL unions in securing some of these things. And I just think it's tougher when you got 53 guys. You have the has and the have-nots for sure in the NBA. No question about it. But there are all kinds of different classes in the NFL.
Last thing about the NBA is the NBA class of have-nots has the money. They just can't get anybody to take it. Like, teams are throwing contracts to these guys, Lakers, Sacramento, et cetera.
That's okay. Aaron Aflalo will take it. Just ask the Knicks. Eventually you'll find someone who will take your
Knicks
money.
The Knicks are taking any warm body. Whereas the NFL, you're doing all these maneuvers just to, squeeze another guy under the cap. And so it's just, you know, each of the systems in the four major sports are so different, because NHL, it's a 20-man roster during the season, and the cap is like, I think, 68. Or, yeah, 68, yes. Something like that. So, I mean, you know, if you have a tall kid, teach him a mid-range jumper.
No question. No question, man. Or you know, tie his right arm behind his back and make him a lefty reliever. One of the two. Those are your choices. Jeff Prosser, from the desk of Jeff Prosser, we get this. He says it's literally just called purple cabbage. But there's something in the way it's like pickled or something. I think my granny used to eat purple cabbage pickled in a jar, and I thought it had a different name for it. It is gross. I'm not denying. My grandmother's a gross woman, Tony, okay? I freely admit that. God rest her soul. But she'd be 106 years old this year had she made it, but she didn't. So there we go. We'll go with purple cabbage for now. What is on your menu for your perfect July 4th cookout? Share your thoughts with us on Twitter and on Facebook as well. The number 641-1010. Coming up next, we'll talk with the Hal Habib of the Palm Beach Post. Covers the Miami Dolphins. They'll be rolling into town week two of the NFL season, and we'll get the lowdown on the Dolphins all season. That's coming up next with Rhino Howard and Fat Tony. I'm Mike Dempsey. Cardinal and Cadillac bringing you the show today, Thursday on Jaguars Today on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
I know we came in at halftime and felt, even though, you know, that we were behind in the score, boy, we just didn't capture those opportunities. And so many of them, blocked field goal, missed touchdown in the end zone. Just those things right there where when you are consistently good, you do those little things right.
That was Gus Bradley, Jaguar head coach, as if you didn't recognize him, but that was following last year's 14-point loss to the Miami Dolphins. Blake Bortles throwing touchdowns all day in that one. Unfortunately, two of them going to Miami players, taking it back, pick sixes there. Got to get out of this mode, Ryan, where the Jags are competitive, man. There's no moral victories, we know, but when you're a building and a rebuilding team, you sometimes do take a little solace in how competitive you are, going toe-to-toe. You look at if you can list just a handful of mistakes that if you clean up, maybe it went the other way. It's not going to be good enough this year to have that kind of outcome. But that was certainly one of the games I think people look at from last year and say, wow, but for a handful of plays, could have been a different outcome, even though it was a 14-point loss.
Yeah, because if I remember right, the Jaguars had possession like 27 out of the first 30 plays of the game,
right,
and had really nothing to show for it,
right.
So,
got to break that cycle this year. Let's talk a little Miami Dolphin football. They're coming in week two after the Jags polish off the Carolina Panthers.
That's right.
Start 1-0, baby. Hal Habib with the Palm Beach Post here to talk Dolphin football with us. Good morning, Hal. How are you, buddy?
I'm great. How are you guys doing?
Good.
We're not doing as well as Ryan Tannehill, I don't think, with all that cash that guy's got. I think they had to sign him to the extension, don't you, Hal? I mean, it looked like, you know, his numbers, he's an ascending player. His numbers have been getting better, more efficient every year. From your eyes, is Tannehill a true franchise quarterback?
A franchise quarterback for the Miami Dolphins, put it that way. You know, quarterbacks are in rare supply in the NFL, good ones anyway. And this was a move that they had to make, you know. I mean, you always have to look at things from a personnel perspective in terms of what are the other options out there. And, you know, they made an investment in him a few years ago, making him a first-round pick. They knew that he was a bit of a project coming out of college because of his limited experience. And he's gotten better every year. And, you know, look at a couple of games here. There were games where he completed, I think it was 13 and 14 passes in a row. That tells me that there's some good accuracy out of this guy. It's a matter of getting the long ball out of him. That's the one thing that we haven't seen.
Hey, Hal, one thing, Jared Odrick started his career in Miami, signed with the Jaguars. Was he a disappointment there, or was he just – played out of position?
I would not in any way say that he was a disappointment. For one thing, I got to tell you, from a personal level, he was a player who delighted in making fun of whatever I was wearing more than any other player on the roster. That's why I was surprised that he left. He no longer has that opportunity up in Jacksonville.
But, oh, trust me, no, Hal. Hal, there's plenty of guys that dress poorly up here. There are plenty of targets of opportunity for him in that regard.
Well, he won't bypass those opportunities for a minute. I can promise you that. But no, I think Jaguars fans are going to take a liking to Odrick. He's a guy who, if you pay attention to what's happening on the line, I do sometimes in games, you'll see that he's a very solid player. He's going to hold his own. He's going to be productive, make some plays. You know, when the Dolphins started pursuing Sue, it was obvious then, actually it was obvious even before then, that it was going to be hard for Miami to fit him under the salary cap. And so, you know, he did what he had to do from a business perspective. But I think that he did well here. You know, he was playing on a line with a lot of talent and defensive linemen left and right because of the heat. But, yeah, he performed well, and I think Miami is sorry to see him go, and I think Jacksonville will be happy to have him.
Hal, a guy that I don't think Miami was sorry to see go, how bad were things towards the end of the year with Mike Wallace, and how are all those new faces in the wide receiver core gelling together?
Well, that's a little bit of a tough one. You know, unless you were in those meeting rooms, that's where it seems like a lot of that stuff was going on. The Mike Wallace that we saw was a guy who was always smiling, upbeat, happy, all of those things that you would like to see in a player. The Mike Wallace that the teammates saw was maybe a different guy. Certainly, you know, you can look at his performance on the field in a number of different ways. He had, what, 900 yards last year? So, hey, those are decent numbers. But, you know, what everybody remembers are the misconnections on those long balls with Tannehill. And now there's quite a bit of Wallace bashing going on down here. The question is whether those misconnections were a product of Tannehill unable to deliver the deep ball to him or Wallace unable to make those adjustments when the ball was in the air. I kind of think that it was a little bit of both, but you know, obviously Wallace left on bad terms, pulling himself out of the last game and everything. But now that move helped open the door for Miami to draft Devontae Parker in the first round. And ever since the very first practice down here, I've been the guy.
What about, go ahead, sorry.
Well, I'm sorry, just to add a little bit more on Parker, this is a guy who I don't think I've seen him drop a pass in practice yet. And a lot of people talk about that one thing he has that Wallace probably doesn't, a catch radius. If Tannehill puts the ball anywhere near Devontae Parker, he's going to come down with it. And I'm thinking that Parker may well lead the team in receiving yards this year, and Jarvis Landry could well lead the teams this year. And that could be a pretty good combination, those two.
What did Parker have? Foot surgery? What is his timetable to return and get back in action for the Dolphins? Will he be ready for training camp?
I think he'll be ready for this regular season opener. It's a matter of how strong he'll be at that point. You know, he's had the foot problems coming out of college and all. I think that the one encouraging thing from a Miami Dolphin perspective is that, you know, he missed half the season last year with those foot problems. But when he came back, I mean, you really see a guy come back from a long injury like that and just catch fire right off the bat. You know, 100-yard, 200-yard game. He had 200 yards against Florida State, and what was it, his second game back. So if he can do anything like that for Miami, I think the Dolphins are going to be delighted.
Hal, obviously Sue was the big free agent addition. How much better does he make them, and would you have allocated that money elsewhere?
You know, I think that if you have a chance to sign Ndamukong Suh, you almost have to make that move. Unless you're really blessed on the defensive line, can say that they're that blessed to bypass an Ndamukong Suh. you know, he's a game changer. He really is. You know, the question obviously is whether he's going to behave himself the way he did not in Detroit when it came time to, you know, get on the field. But, yeah, I mean, look at him next to Cam Wake and Olivier Vernon on the other side of that line. That's a pretty formidable defensive front right there. I think that was when Miami just couldn't bypass that.
Hal, already heard some of the talk about the Miami Dolphins going into the 2015 season as a team that could jump into the playoff picture this year. How realistic an expectation is that for this year's team?
Well, Joe Philbin better hope it's realistic, because I don't see any way on earth, as much as Steve Ross loves Joe Philbin, if Philbin doesn't make the playoffs this year, I don't see any way in the world he's back again next year. I don't care how many injuries or excuses there may be. But, you know, you got to look first at the AFC East, and, well, I'm not sure if it's the best. I think it's the most interesting division in the NFL now with all the changes that have been made. I think Miami should be and will be in the mix for a playoff hunt. It's probably going to be a one-game swing. Either they're in or they're out. But with so many changes, it's hard to predict exactly how much better they are. My gut tells me that, you know, 10 wins is attainable. But, you know, we have to wait and see. There's so many moving pieces in this lineup, and so much will come down to the offensive line and whether that has shown any improvement over last year.
Hal Habib, Palm Beach Post, as we wrap up here, Hal. If Tom Brady's suspension is upheld, if he misses the first month of the season, and we know there are a lot of variables involved there, could that be enough to allow the Dolphins to close the gap? Do you think they're realistically in the mix, to, in your opinion, to overtake New England this year and actually win the AFC East?
I'm not ready to say division championship, no. I talk about playoffs in Miami. I'm looking more at a wild card spot. I mean, New England was so much better than Miami last year, and I know that New England is probably taking a step back with all the changes up there, but I don't know if Miami has made enough of a leap forward, the hoodie. That might be a bit much to ask for anybody right now.
Hey, could Jay Ajayi push Lamar Miller for the job down there, or was he just too good of a value for the Dolphins to pass up in round five, and he was just kind of a draft pick of opportunity?
Well, he was a great value, no question about that. Can he leap into the starting role? I think he can. You know, it's so hard. You guys know, in OTAs, there's no tackling, no pads, none
right.
of that. It's so hard to judge what a running back can and can't do. Because, I mean, how much of it comes down to breaking tackles and all of that kind of thing. So we don't really have a gauge on how good this guy is on an NFL level yet. But my gut tells me that, yeah, he'll contend. I mean, at 1,000 yards. He got a lot of tough yards that I didn't think he was capable of getting. But is he that firmly entrenched in the starting role that Ajayi couldn't overtake him? No, I don't think I'm ready to say that. It could be a good 1-2 punch, though.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on that. Fantasy owners are not happy with 1-2 punches, by the way. And yes, I did have there were fantasy undertones to that question, Hal. Hal Habib from the Palm Beach Post. Hal, we'll see you in week two of the regular season. And from Jags fans' perspective, they hope a different outcome than we got last year. Thanks for the time this morning.
Thank you, and good luck to your fantasy team in 2015.
They don't need luck, baby. They just need me picking the players. Thank you, Hal. We'll see you, buddy. Happy Independence Day. Happy July 4th weekend to you. Hal Habib from the Palm Beach Post. By the way, somebody on Twitter on the Boston's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line asked, how come the Jags play the Dolphins in consecutive years? That was Fred who sent it in. Well, this year they play the entire AFC East, which you rotate through the other three divisions. But for so many years, you've seen the Colts, when Manning was there, play the Patriots. Now Denver play the Patriots. If you end up in the same spot in the standings in your division in the same conference, you're going to play the same team. So if you're a third-place team, you're going to play all the third-place teams in the two divisions that you don't play the entire division. Sure. Makes sense? Does that make
yep.
I mean, it makes sense in my head.
That's how they made two trips to Oakland. Two straight years.
Yep.
One was the play schedule, then the second year was they played the whole AFC West.
Right. And
that's why you keep getting stuck playing San Diego. They just keep finishing third.
Right. I mean, and that's exactly right. I mean, if they finish in that spot and you finish third, you're going to play the third place
right.
teams in those divisions.
As opposed to getting to play Oakland. As you said, you just keep having to play San Diego.
Right. We'd rather take Oakland, but that's okay. We'll take them all. All right. Jack's now 2-0. They've beaten the Panthers and the Dolphins, and next
feels
week
feels good.
Rolling.
We'll take a look
the
at
Foxborough.
The Pats. That's right. We're coming to Foxborough. Jimmy Garoppolo's team. We'll do that next week, along with the Indianapolis Colts. We'll do two a week until we catch up with these guys when they're back in training camp. Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you. This date in football history and the drive around the NFL coming up next year on 1010 XL 92.5 FM. All right, this state in football history, I'm just chock full of birthdays today is what I got for you in the state in football history. Go back to 1952, Tony. Oh, the miracle at the Meadowlands. That's the perspective of the Philadelphia Eagles. Giants call it the fumble. Not Herm Edwards. Who
Joe
else?
Joe Pisarcik.
There you go, Joe Pisarcik. And if it wasn't him, who would you go with? Zonka. Zonka was supposed to get the ball on that play. Right?
I would have gotten that one.
Yeah, I would have gotten Pisarcik and Herm Edwards scooping up the fumble. Joe Pisarcik trying to run out the clock to try to hand the ball to Larry Zonka. And the exchange is fumbled. Herm Edwards picks it up with no timeouts left, races into the end zone. And the Eagles cut out the Giants' hearts right there.
I've blanked that one from my mind.
They serve it up at their 4th of July barbecue every year, another piece of Giant fans' hearts. Joe Pisarcik, 63 years old today, born in 1952. 1971 brought us the birth of one Troy Brown, a multiple-time Super Bowl champion, and a guy who not only dabbled playing a little defensive back as he was primarily a receiver with over 500 catches in his NFL career, actually in 2004 had three interceptions in a part-time role. So did pretty well back there. Couple of Jaguar birthdays today. We mentioned earlier, Chad Henne turning the big 3-0 today. And Clay Harbor, 28 years young, born on this date in 1987. And this date in football history brought to you all week by Bob Roberts, First Coast Roofing, license number CCC056797 for all your roofing needs, in-home or for your business. It's First Coast Roofing, the call to make. That is this date in football history.
Now drive around the NFL.
Houston Texans undrafted rookie free agent Brandon Ivory is facing a charge of first-degree burglary. The police report for the incident indicates that Ivory and another man kicked in the back door of a residence, assaulted someone in the house, took cash and a couple of iPads, and then fled. The incident occurred in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. Ivory attended the University of Alabama. One of the two men, according to the police report, were carrying an assault rifle during the robbery. The Texans released the following statement when the news broke yesterday. Quote, the Houston Texans are aware of the police report regarding defensive tackle Brandon Ivory in Tuscaloosa, Alabama. At this time, we will have no further comment until we gather all of the relevant facts. End quote.
Was he a draft pick or was he a
undrafted
guy? So he's not making big money, but he's finally, I mean, got a chance to make some decent money,
yep.
right? So it makes you wonder if this story is true. The hell was he doing before he had money?
Right.
Right? If he's kicking in doors with a knife or assault rifle in hand, what is he doing when he was just a lowly college student?
Yeah, that's a mess.
For goodness sakes. Come on.
The Pittsburgh Steelers have applied to host the Super Bowl in 2023. Heinz Field, where the Steelers play their home games, is expected to be finished or nearly finished with some stadium renovations by that time. Of course, the Super Bowl was in New York a couple of years ago. It's going to be in the new outdoor stadium in Minnesota. When that one gets built here in the next year or two, so
now a roof.
The cold stadiums, maybe they got a place now in
yeah.
the Super Bowl mix.
Well, hopefully for Pittsburgh, unlike the last two times I went up there to see a game when the Jags were playing in 2007, hopefully the Super Bowl will keep people in the stands because it was a mass exodus come about the third quarter, particularly in that regular season encounter for the self-anointed best fans in the world. They were certainly heading towards the turnstiles in rapid fashion when the Jags were putting that smackdown on them back then. So hopefully a Super Bowl will keep people around, maybe for the halftime show. I don't know.
Yeah.
Who knows? You see the comments that some anonymous CFL coaches and general managers had to say about Michael Sam, that they thought he was a big American prima donna coming up here, thought he was just going to dominate the CFL, and that's not the case. He's getting some a little bit of pushback up there now. I don't know what's, you know, I can't tell you if he's acting like a prima donna with the media. I don't know if anybody can. He hasn't been around that long up there. But, man, I mean, you just for a guy who we understand why he gained notoriety, but I think for the most part, he tried to keep his head down and go about his business. Now, I know that the leave of absence was kind of a weird thing, but I didn't get the impression at any point in this that Michael Sam was trying to put himself above anything else. You said, Ryan, in looking at, you saw that note at the bottom of a story on CFL quarterbacks, right? Mm-hmm. And you ran through some of the names just to see how many of these guys would we even recognize. Who were some of the top signal callers in the Canadian Football League?
Well, the guys that got hurt were Jonathan Crompton, Dan LeFever, which got your attention.
Yeah, Dan LeFever, Central Michigan,
yeah.
Right? Tony and I were talking about that. Yeah, there have been pet quarterbacks. Connor Shaw was one of them, right? From the Jaguar fan base before the Jags drafted Blake Bortles, that they wanted X guy. This is the guy. LeFever was definitely one of those guys in the last few years that had a little bit of a cult following.
Yeah, so like, you know, so I wanted to see that, but these comments were sort of at the end of the story. So it's not like this guy tried to like blow this out of proportion.
Right. This is kind of matter of fact. This is what people are saying about him.
Yeah, and I mean, you're always going to like find, if you want somebody to say something, you're going to find somebody to say it, if that makes any sense. But my guess is this guy was just calling around talking about the first week of the season, and it was brought up to him, and you know, stuff like that you put in.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, if somebody going to give you that quote,
yeah.
I'm surprised it was kind of buried at the bottom of that article.
Yeah. So, but it was interesting how, I mean, he left the team, and even the GM said, I don't expect him back, but then he returned. So it'll be interesting to see if he can carve out a niche as a pass rusher in that league.
Yeah. Well, you know, if he can't do it there,
that's it.
Not going to do it anywhere. And at this point in time, he's like a lot of other guys, probably hanging on to his football career by his fingertips. If you want to get on board, 641-1010 is the way to do it. We had a couple of folks weigh in with recipes to cook your alligator, and it involved a lot of soaking it in buttermilk for mm-hmm. as long as humanly possible, at least a couple of days, and basically deep frying it. That seemed to be the consensus, which way to go with the alligator. So if you are cooking up alligator this week, hopefully you've got a plan in place. If not, go with the buttermilk pre-soak and then fry that bad boy. And that's what we're looking for today. Share your thoughts on the perfect menu for your July 4th cookout. You can tweet us at MD_1010XL, at Ryan O'Halloran, at 1010XL, Fat Tony as well. Caudill and Cadillac bringing you the show today. Typically our Friday sponsor, we won't be here on Friday, so I'll remind you that since 1905, Caudill and Cadillac has served as the preferred Cadillac dealer right here in Northeast Florida. Why? Well, a lot of reasons, but some of them are, they've got the largest selection of new and pre-owned Cadillacs in Jacksonville. They've got absolutely no dealer fees. And, by the way, the only Cadillac dealer in North Florida selling and servicing the ELR is Claude Nolan Cadillac. The elegance and experience of driving a Cadillac, one simple step away. You can build your lasting relationship by logging on to ClaudeNolan.com or visit them at 4700 Southside Boulevard. Call 642-5111 for Claude Nolan Cadillac. And when you do, tell them Mike Dempsey sent you. They're going to take great care of you. Our friends at Claude Nolan Cadillac, today's Thursday sponsor of Jaguars Today. Coming back live at Everbank, Mike Dempsey, Ryan O'Halloran, Fat Tony here with you on this Thursday on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.
And it all goes back to the quarterback. And I saw improvement from him. He's never going to be a guy. You look at him on the practice field, you go, wow, wow, wow. But he's one of those guys when he gets in the games, if he has right weapons, right offensive system, I think he's going to be a good quarterback. So they're going to be better. Now, how much better? I'm playing out the season now as I go through the summer. I, you know, do that thing every year where I pick every game. I got them winning their first two.
Hey, Pete Prisco yesterday on XL Pride Time.
Packer. What do you think about Pete's prediction?
Two. They're going to win their first 16. Are you kidding me? Gonna make a mid-season trade for Tim Tebow, and everyone will be happy. They'll be winning. We'll have Tebow. It'll be perfect. There you have it. Prisco got him 2-0. They need to at least be 1-1, but Why not? Why can't they go 2-0? I mean, Carolina's a playoff team. They're a 7-8-1 playoff team. We talked about that on Tuesday, Tony, with Mick Mixon. That team was 3-8-1, Ryan, going into December last year. You know, and they get hot at the right time. The year before, they went 12-4, but they started 1-3. So they've had some slow starts. Hey, we're happy to help them off, get off to the right foot in that department once again. But I don't see any reason. Look, it's not like these teams are pushovers. But and certainly, you know, they're going to look at the Jags and say the same thing. Hey, the Jags won 9 games in 3 years. These are W's that we should be picking up. That's an easy way to start the season. That's a great way to get rid of a road game right out of the gates if you're Carolina. That's what you're thinking.
Yeah, I mean, if you're the Dolphins, you open up at Redskins, at Jaguars. You're thinking 2-0.
Oh, you think 2-0, and now we're rolling, right? We get a couple of our road games out of the way. Yeah. Now let's get down to business. And if New England does struggle early in the season, if Tom Brady's suspension gets upheld, you know, who knows at this point. But, you know, Miami's going to be thinking division title. But I don't know. You know, we'll see when the season gets closer. It's tough to project in the summer. But I appreciate what Pete does, because if you're really going to project the records of teams, that's the way you should do it, I think. Go through the schedule week by week and try to say, all right, I think this team's going to beat that team. At the end, just total them up.
Because I'll do that. He goes one step further. He picks the dang scores.
Right. That's whatever. You know, that's.
But no, if you're going to predict records, you got to make sure everything adds
the
up.
The wins and the losses need to be equal, right?
You can't have seven teams go 12-4.
And I will say this, not everyone does that. It drives me crazy every year when you got a bunch of teams winning 10 games or winning whatever, and it's just kind of willy nilly. Just go through, hey, this is what I think based on the matchups, I don't know if it's any more accurate, but at least it's has a chance of being more accurate than just throwing a number out to each team out there. But, man, can you imagine what it'll be like, how great it'll be? I mean, it's been two wins is practically what they've averaged for the last 3 years. If they could come out of the gate 2-0.
Imagine if they win the opener.
Just win the opener,
that
right?
That week?
Oh, it'd be fantastic, right? I mean, just with the slow starts that they have, but if they really if they could get two at home, going to New England with house money. Because, look, even if Garoppolo were to play, if Tom Brady's suspension is upheld and he misses the first month of the season, or at least misses week three, they're still going to be favored, right? They're still going to be the favorite team. Going to Indy, clearly Indy's going to be favored in that game. Not that you can't go toe-to-toe and win that, but, boy, now all of a sudden your mind starts racing and getting greedy. What if we win in New England? What if we just split the next two on the road, and you're 3-1 coming out of your first month, your first quarter of the season? That's a high watermark that we haven't seen in a while. So I don't think it's unrealistic to think they can get it done. Playing at home, you know, going to have to, obviously the offense is going to have to get off to a better start than it has in recent years, and it's going to need to keep up that pace as well. 641-1010 is the number if you'd like to get on board today. Talking about a variety of stuff going on around the National Football League. You can send your message on the Boss's Restaurant and Sports Bar text line if you want to get in that way as well. We had some folks sending in a few, alligator recipes. Had some people out there talking about wanting to cook up a little, gator, this weekend. I did have this on the text line from, Dusty. He asked if you could give a Justin Blackman update. Ryan. He said, actually, he's kidding. Happy 4th of July. And he'll be serving up burgers and hot dogs. What is for now to the end of the month, is all you're trying to hear is no news when it comes to the Jacksonville Jaguars?
Yes.
I mean, there's no storyline that we should be listening for in terms of, you know, like story out today. And you see these all the time. Could be any team. Geno Smith's going to work with his receivers. We expect Blake to have some time with these guys before camp opens up. How important do you think that is? You know, some think that they have too much practice time as it is already. Some players do. But how important is it to maintain a little bit of continuity with all that time off?
I mean, I don't see it as a negative if Gus would have said to Blake on the last day of veteran minicamp, hey, for these next 6 weeks, play some golf, you know, but don't, you know, study
your playbook, but don't obsess.
But don't kill yourself.
Don't burn yourself out.
Yeah, you know, if you want to have one or two or three throwing sessions a week before camp opens, you know, to sort of just get the rust off a little bit.
Get the timing down a little bit.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're going to throw so many passes during these practices that you know, I think you're maybe get the diminishing returns at some point.
And unlike last year, Blake comes in as the lead guy and will be the lead guy. He got plenty of reps last year. They always, quote, had that plan in place for him. But this time it'll be, you know, the true lion's share, 75% or whatever of the reps going his way. Been some talk, not a ton, a lot of talk about Allen Robinson being a breakout player. And I think everybody's on board with him being the Jags' projected number one receiver at this point in time. Who's more productive ultimately in 2015, Allen Hurns or Marquise Lee?
I'm going to say Allen Hurns because you've seen him do it more. Marquise Lee, just so many unknowns. So Hurns has a way of making a play here or there, making a big play here and there. So I think when you line up the numbers, you know, Allen may have more catches. Marquise may have a little bit more yards, but I think Allen had more touchdowns.
More touchdowns, ultimately. So you think, though, Marquise Lee, what, the run after catch ability, you think is what's going to put him on top
in terms of
yardage?
I mean, I think they're going to give him a lot of shots downfield, and you hit one of those for 55, that makes up for that's more than six catches of Allen Hurns for 8 yards apiece.
Is that where he's going to be most effective or most useful to the football team? Because last year early on, I think they looked for ways to get him involved, and a lot of that involved quick hitting, like wide receiver screen, little slot screens and stuff like that. Just get the ball in his hands, let his natural athletic ability come into play. Will we see more of those big shots over the top, or you know, what's going to be the most vital part of the attack when it centers around Marquise Lee?
Well, I think it is going to be the home run. I mean, he's your fastest, your most explosive guy downfield. You feel like with Robinson, Thomas, and Hurns, and Lewis, you got guys who can work from the line of scrimmage 20 yards downfield. I'd say Marquise, your best route's going to be a 9 route straight down the field. Hoping from a Jaguars perspective, the secondary is paying attention to Thomas or paying attention to Robinson over the middle of the field, and that frees Marquise up for some one-on-one downfield.
What kind of buzz, if any, did you pick up from the coaching staff or just watching him yourself with what you can discuss about Rashad Greene after, you know, first day or so in rookie minicamp, a little shaky, getting the nerves out, but I've heard, and Tony and I couldn't see any of the OTA practices because they all took place while we were on the air. But I continue to hear that Rashad Greene impressed people with his, you know, his route running, his hands, things like that. Did you get that sense that he was impressive?
Yes. Coaching staff, teammates, you know, they sort of said, okay, he sort of, you know, what they wanted to see is he kept raising his level throughout the offseason as soon as he got here. To when maybe they had one thing in their mind in terms of what he can contribute, you know, maybe now they feel like he can do a little bit more.
Are they going to have enough offensively? I mean, to make that leap, we talked about it last week. Like I think we talked about it with Johnny O on Monday as well, right? Like
we did.
If we could, you take them from what they scored last year, which is around 15 points a game, something in that general range. If they could add 5 to 7 points per game on a weekly basis, on average, put them kind of middle of the pack in the National Football League. And if you expect the defense to be a step better than they were last year, and the defense is pretty solid, that could translate to significant improvement in the win-loss column. Do you think that's a reasonable expectation? Can they add close to a full touchdown per game this year to the offensive numbers?
You gave me a research project to see how often that's been done.
To make that jump.
7 points. I was thinking about this during my travels the last week is, okay, who do you have more questions about? Everybody say offense. I have a lot of questions about this defense. Okay, are they going to be able to stop people on a regular basis? Are they going to be able to get a consistent pass rush without Fowler? If I had to pick one area, one side that I have more concerns about, I'd pick the defense. Because I think offensively, I think if you combine the experience that they gain, the addition of Thomas, the drafting of Yeldon, I think it's easier to say they're going to be better.
Do you think the pass rush takes a step back this year? I mean, it's basically the same personnel.
Yes.
Is that because they got home at a high percentage of rate? I mean, in terms of how much pressure they had, they got home and got sacks a high percentage of time. You think that just comes back to the norm, or do you think it's age setting in with Chris Clemens, or what is the reason you expect them to take a step back?
There's not a lot of reason to have confidence in a guy like Andre Branch, who I think is going to be the starter. Add another year to Clemens, who had a couple huge games.
Right.
Didn't show a lot of consistency. And then what are you going to get from an interior pass rush from Cedric Marks, coming off the knee? Is that, when will he be on the field? And also the big thing is I don't think they're going to change their scheme a lot. I think they need to send more people more often, and that doesn't seem like they're going
to
do that.
No, that seems to be the philosophy, that they want to get pressure with their four down linemen. Yeah.
And at 4-12 and 3-13, I'd think of something different.
I agree with you. There, you reach a point where what's the cost, right? I mean, you're already getting beat doing it this way. Sometimes you take a chance, maybe you get beat worse, but sometimes you'll force the other team into mistakes.
Well, and on the defensive side of the ball too, I do think the defensive line in general is going to take a step back from the production they had in 2014, and the depth at linebacker that they had last year. We didn't know what it was going to look like going into the season, but JT Thomas and a bunch of those guys really stepped up over the course of that 2014 year and kept them in games with some of the plays that they were making. Is there anybody behind their starting three in that linebacker core right now that can give them that same kind of thing? Because injuries are going to happen somewhere, and if it happens at the linebacker core, they could be in trouble.
We
look at their starting defensive 11 projected for week one. Is okay. You don't know about Andre Branch. You don't know about Cedric Marks' injury. You don't know about Roy Miller's injury. You don't know about Dan Scuda playing a bigger role. You don't know Puzlesny's injury. You don't know about Devon House being a number one. You don't know about Sergio Brown. You don't know about Cypring. Is he going to take the next step? So that's a lot of don't knows for a starting 11.
Yeah, I think the thing with JT Thomas, I agree with you. He played very well last year. I think though, if you had brought him back based on the number, the Giants basically paid him to be a starting weak side linebacker.
Yeah.
Not an exorbitant contract, but probably something in the ballpark, I would bet, without having the numbers right in front of me, of what Scuda got here. If you have Thomas back, you probably don't have Scuda on the team, right? Yeah. So it's not like you lose that guy, and boy, that took out your depth. You probably would have had one or the other. Maybe Scuda turns out to be the better player. But I agree with you. JT Thomas was solid for them last year, and without him, they would have been in a lot more trouble. I'm not worried about the starting 11, I think, as much as you are. I don't think Sergio Brown's going to be any worse than they've had at free safety over the last few years, and they still have Josh Evans on the roster. They got Loston, so they still have the same type of options that they've had in the past. So I don't think it's going to be a step back. You make a good point, especially early in the season, with the interior of that defensive line, with Miller and Marks. What are they going to get out of these guys? And with another year with Chris Clemens, Andre Branch, I mean, there are some guys. I think the hope is a guy like Ryan Davis continues to ascend and maybe gives you even a little bit more than he gave you last year, and that you're able to piece it together again. I don't think they're looking at, as much as they like Andre Branch to be a 10-12 sack guy, I don't think they clearly can't count on any one guy to carry the lion's share of the pass rush.
If they're going to get, would they have 45 sacks last year?
Yes.
If they want to approach 40, like you said, they're going to have to go 6-6-6-7-6.
Basically like they did last year. Mm-hmm. Bunch of guys doing that. And linebackers is thin as can be. I mean, when you say we don't know about Puzlesny because of injury, I think what you're saying is we don't know if he can stay healthy, right? I mean, there's nothing particularly right now that's going to hold him back, but how long will that last based on his recent track record?
And also, getting up to that age where you start losing a step or two.
Right.
And usually it's not gradual. It's overnight.
Right. So, well, let's hope that's not the case with him. A lot of his injuries have been upper body stuff. So from that standpoint, hopefully the legs are still in good shape, still fresh, all that as far as it goes. But interesting, because I think most people are still more concerned about the offense simply because they haven't seen it produce in a while. Mm-hmm. You know, and the defense was solid, not spectacular, but solid last year. Now you're making us all depressed, man. Poking holes in the whole system.
The only case I'd make for the defense matching their sack total is if they're simply just in more games and teams have to
continue to throw, you know, right?
If they have more chances to pass rush.
Yeah, which would be a great sign, and that would be a direct benefit of a better offense as well. All right, we got to take a quick time out. We'll come back. Fan Feedback Spotlight asking you with the holiday weekend coming up, what's on your menu for the perfect July 4th cookout? Share your thoughts with us at MD_1010XL, at 1010XL Fat Tony, at Ryan O'Halloran on Twitter. You've got the particulars there. It's a Caudill and Cadillac Thursday. It's Jaguars Today live from Everbank on 1010XL 92.5 FM. All right, coming down the stretch, today's show brought to you by Caudill and Cadillac, our typical Friday sponsor. We're not going to be here on Friday. Friday's brought to you by Independence and Freedom. The freedom to not show up for work. I hope everybody has a nice 4th of July weekend plan. Be safe. Don't be stupid. Tell you all the time. Drink. Drink in abundance if you want to. Don't get behind the wheel of a motorized vehicle. And don't put me in jeopardy. Don't put my family in jeopardy.
That's right.
Chill. Do your thing. Go crazy. You know, phone the neighbors. Wake the kids. I don't care. Be loud at 4 a.m. It's kind of expected a little bit. You know, July 4th, you hear random fireworks go off in the neighborhood at midnight. You can't really be too upset. It's kind of like New Year's Eve, right?
Yeah, New Year's, you can't be upset if you hear fireworks at midnight. I think July 4th, I think I give
them to midnight on
July 4th. I think it's reasonable that, like, if you're trying to go to bed at 12:30 on the 4th of July and you start hearing fireworks, it's reasonable to be a little upset.
Ah!
I get that it doesn't get dark till 9 right now. So, yeah, at 9 o'clock, if that's when you want to start shooting the fireworks, you got that window, like an hour, hour and a half. Go have fun. Enjoy the fireworks, and then everybody wants to go to bed. It's midnight. All right? Have a little respect for the people around you.
Well, I can't think of the last time I went to bed at midnight on a Saturday. And I'm an old dude.
Me
man.
Either.
I mean, the night doesn't start until I get off the air at 10 on Saturday night, and then I got to watch SNL, and so the night really gets rolling at about 1. That's when things get good at the Dempsey household. You fill in the blanks for yourself, all right? 641-1010. What do you got coming up this weekend, O'Halloran?
Well, I got some stuff in the Times Union.
Well, do tell. What do you got?
Well, I got a feature on Chris Driggers, who's the new director of pro personnel here. Went to Bishop Kenny, so he's a rare Jacksonville native who's been here from the start. So that was fun. And then continue the summer series, looking at number one receivers around the league. Who does each team consider their number one guy? And then we'll have another insider. So keeping feeding the beast this weekend.
Do you try to determine if they're truly a, quote, number one type NFL number one?
I have divided it into categories. I have one category, like super number ones.
No unquestioned number one guys.
Next deal, I said second year equals stardom, all those second year guys.
Okay.
You know, guys who best days behind them, but they're still good, like your Fitzgeralds.
Gotcha.
And then I put the Jaguars in this category. They're not number one, but they're our number one.
Gotcha.
And then the last one is our tight end is our number one.
Okay. All right. That would be the case for New England.
Seattle.
Possibly more. Kansas City. Although they have Macklin in there now. Carolina, Greg Olson.
I got Benjamin as that second.
Okay.
Tennessee is my third team.
I guess so. They don't really have Delanie Walker over any of that hodgepodge cast of
I'm hoping the Green Beckham thing blows up in their face. We'll see if it does or not. I was talking to you a moment ago.
Don't we always hope everything blows up in Tennessee's face?
But as talking about Tennessee, the only first-round pick that isn't signed right now is Marcus Mariota. And there's been some talk about what the heck is the holdup, what's taking so long.
Offset money? Could it be offset money?
It's not offset money. Apparently the story is that the Titans want to include a clause in the contract that says that Marcus Mariota cannot surf. He's not allowed to go surfing, and Mariota refuses to sign the contract with that language in it. So that's the holdup between the two sides right now, is whether or not Marcus Mariota is going to be allowed to surf.
Could you imagine?
He's from Hawaii. I mean,
I understand he's from Hawaii.
That's probably what he does. Like,
okay, well,
just,
you know, it may be what he does, but I don't think it's unreasonable if you're an NFL team that says, hey, we're going to invest all this money in you. We don't want you surfing, and if you do, we're not going to take the liability, the risk, if you get hurt doing that. But put it this way. Can you imagine if that story was going on here? Imagine if last year Blake Bortles gets drafted third overall by the Jacksonville Jaguars and is the lone remaining unsigned rookie, and it's because Blake Bortles wants a clause in his contract that allows him to surf. I mean, forget it. People would lose their freaking minds. And I'm sure there's a good portion of the people in Nashville doing that right now. He doesn't love football. You can't love football. I mean, has surfing. Are you kidding me? And look, I mean, you have to make sacrifices sometimes, right, when you go into your chosen profession.
Surf at the water park because you can't crash into any rocks.
This is true. You can't.
There's your compromise.
But if you wipe out, you hit that concrete on the bottom. You ever get in the wave pool?
It's been a while.
Knock you around pretty good now. Be careful in there, O'Halloran. We will get to the fan feedback spotlight coming up. Let's get a couple calls in quickly. 641-1010. Put that headset back on, Ryan O'Halloran. Nick is next up on Jaguars Today. Good morning, Nick.
Hey, before I get to my point about the Jaguars, I wanted to sympathize with Tony about people firing off their fireworks at 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning, but it could be worse. I used to live out in the country, and they don't bother with fireworks out in the country. What they do is they fire their guns, and they shoot them off 4 or 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, and believe me, there's nothing you can do about it, because you're not going to roll up on some redneck, some drunk redneck at 5 o'clock in the morning and tell him to stop shooting his gun.
Let me ask you, is this just a July 4th issue, or is that just a general issue in your experience?
Actually, out there, it was in northern Idaho, and it used to happen all the time.
Okay.
In fact,
well, maybe they're hunting. Letting loose?
Usually what would happen is somebody would fire off their handgun, and then you'd hear maybe a shotgun go off, and then you'd hear this really loud explosion. So it was almost like whoever had the biggest gun would win. You know, after that, there was no more firing of guns after that. But what I wanted to bring up about the Jaguars, and maybe your guest can kind of give a little insight on it, I'm a little bit bothered by what happened in the offseason with the firing of Jed Fish. You know, we were told that they gave a really odd reason, and that was that he wasn't bringing Bortles along right, which I thought was very strange, because that's something you could have adjusted. Somebody could have said something. I mean, you mean to tell me they went 16 games and nobody told Jed Fish that they wanted him to coach Bortles differently? And then we find out that Bortles had a dead arm at the end of the season or halfway through the season. So it's really hard to judge how good a job Fish did. So I'm wondering, what is the sort of mixed message? Is it a result of the cons being involved, Tony and Schott, or what's, you know, is there something behind this, or am I all wrong? Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you, Nick.
Guest?
Guest Ryan.
Okay, that's me.
Let's go to the guest panelist.
The Jed Fish dismissal, it wasn't like a snap of the fingers. It was philosophical in terms of, I think, they wanted their offense run a certain way, and they expressed that, and he disagreed.
And was that certain way? Because we talked about this a little bit. I don't know why it came up on Monday as well with Osier. It was more like they wanted him to focus on consistency. Let's find the things Blake does well, and let's drum them over and over and over again, as opposed to kind of like, hey, let's try this week, let's try this next week. Was it more that, not so much what he was doing, but that he was trying to do so many different things?
Yeah, as you know, you walk in on Tuesday, well, I got 6 new plays.
Right.
Well, yeah, you had 6 last week too.
Right, you had 6 last week, and you got 6 rookies playing on offense, and you've got all these things, so can we simplify a little
bit? Yeah, so I disagree with the assessment that he didn't emphasize the run game enough, because the numbers bear out that, and when they were in those situations, he ran it fine in terms of percentages. I don't have them in front of me, but
when you say those situations,
like
you mean
leading or less,
certain score,
less
right.
than a score.
Gotcha.
So, I think, and let's face it, and I reported this at the time, there was maybe a little bit of a rift between quarterback and coordinator. Wasn't the click that you need out of those two most important people. That said, I will defend Jed. Look what he was dealing with roster-wide. A lot of rookies, a lot of injuries, et cetera.
Sports is full of examples of players, coaches, that for whatever reason don't fit in a certain situation. Doesn't mean they're any less talented. They go to another place, all of a sudden they blossom. Doesn't mean they became smarter. It's just sometimes you have the right mix of personnel, or you have a comfort level, or you have that chemistry. In the case of an offensive coordinator working with a quarterback, whatever the case may be. We've seen it with plenty of Jaguar players, right? This guy can't play. Get rid of him. I mean, people were convinced Rasheen Mathis was dragging around, a 50-pound weights on each ankle his last few years here, and he's played, according to all the analytics, extremely well for Detroit for the last several years. We see it constantly around the National Football League, you know, so and in sports in general. So
I mean, look at when Cedric Marks signed here, Tennessee wanted nothing to do with him.
Right, exactly. So. Case in point, Terrence Knighton goes to Denver, all of a sudden, people are, because he shows up on TV in a couple of playoff games, people are raving about, oh, wow, he's a big difference maker in the middle of that defensive line. How could Jacksonville let him go? And you know, yet, there were perfectly good reasons why you let these guys go at times. So it happens that way from time to time. Tony, what's on the menu this weekend? What are we cooking up for July 4th barbecues?
For me?
Yeah.
Or for the peeps?
Both.
For me, I don't have a grill.
I know. But in your theoretical July 4th cookout.
I have my plan anyway. I'm going to go out and get some ground beef, and I'm probably going to make patty melts or something like that at the house. Myself.
Patty melts?
Yeah. Something. I got to fry it. I don't have any choice.
All right.
I'm not going to bake a burger. So
you have a broiler?
No. I know.
That's an issue.
I know. It's an issue. So I'll wind up just frying
all
some
right.
beef. And
you got a Foreman grill?
I do not, no.
Okay. I need to get you a Foreman grill.
Okay.
All right.
We'll gladly
when's
accept
your birthday's coming up, right?
July 18th, yeah. I won't be here, but July 18th is...
Do you want it next week? Is that what you're trying to tell me?
I didn't say anything. Okay. As far as the listeners out there, Isaiah said barbecue ribs, corn on the cob.
Ribs always rule.
Yeah. From Andy, a ridiculously large burger, barbecue beans, and banana stuffed with chocolate. From Eric, hot dogs, hamburgers, potato salad, American beer, red, white, and blue jello shots, and apple pie. He's covering the bases. Eric is there. From Harold, barbecue in various forms, bacon-wrapped hot dogs, coleslaw, beans, followed by a Pepto-Bismol smoothie.
Why not?
From Daniel, classic ribs, mac and cheese, and coleslaw. Then the Suns game with the family and some fireworks. It'll be their biggest fireworks display. It's 4th of July weekend. And from Black Dog, preparing for a whole hog, mass quantities of adult beverages, fireworks, rock and roll.
Whole hog. That's the way to go right
yeah.
there. I like going to places where people know how to cook and, you know, do the whole hog. And I don't have the patience to grill ribs. I don't have the patience to slow cook anything, man. I want it now. I'm a good griller of the hot dog, the hamburger, the simple stuff. I will gladly eat your barbecued food, but I don't have the patience to stand there and be grill master for the next, oh, I don't know, 10 hours or however long you want to slow cook something. That's why they have restaurants, as far as I'm concerned. But whatever you do this weekend, have a good time doing it. Happy birthday, USA, coming up on Saturday. And good luck to U.S. women's team Sunday, right?
Sunday against Japan, yes.
Sunday against Japan. What a brutal, brutal loss. If that English yep. young English woman were Colombian, she'd be dead by now. But she's not, so they won't take her life probably in jolly old England.
Probably
but,
not.
She will. I mean, that's it. That for the rest of her life, right? Probably the low moment in her life.
Unless
hopefully,
she
it's the low
scores
moment
the winner
life.
In 4 years.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. To exonerate herself at that point. But seeing as how she's a fullback, I doubt she's going to have much of a chance to do that. So she can dwell on that for the next 4 years, though. I was reading the commentary yesterday after that happened. People said it's just the most English way to lose, the most British way to lose a sporting event. That they've kind of resigned themselves to something bad happening.
It is funny.
In the last
minute. I follow along on Twitter as these events go on. Like every year during, every 4 years during the World Cup when England's playing, it's something else.
And apparently that is one more goal than Wayne Rooney has ever scored in the World Cup. Am I correct
it
about
is.
That?
Her own goal is one more than
who is,
he's ever scored.
Currently England's top.
I think he scored this year, finally. I
Did
thought he scored this year.
Did he break the seal?
Yeah, I think so.
Maybe it's a tie. Maybe they're deadlocked. Who knows?
I don't know.
O'Halloran will look for your stuff on Sunday coming out. And have a good 4th of July weekend, my man.
All right, you guys too.
All right, we'll talk to you next week. Ryan O'Halloran will look for his features in the Florida Times Union. For Fat Tony, have a good weekend yourself.
Thank you, Mike.
Trivia coming up on Sunday still?
Trivia Sunday night, yeah, at Cole Haynes Irish Pub. So make it part of your weekend this weekend.
Do that.
Come on out and see us.
I'll be working Sirius XM the next 3 nights. So tune in for that. In fact, we're doing something called the Red, White, and Blue 102 where we count down the early diagnosis and prognosis on the top 102 fantasy players. And I'll tell you this, a couple of Jaguars going to be featured on today's shows. So check that out if you are so inclined. That does it for us today. Thanks to Hal Habib from the Palm Beach Post for joining us. For Ryan O'Howard, for Fat Tony, for Tyler Devitt and Joe Fortunato, I'm Mike Dempsey. We'll say hello to XL Primetime. They're coming up next year on 1010XL, 92.5 FM.